it's an obvious question. Should I stay or should I go? It's more than money. You should stay. I think that's easy. John said he has a little upset stomach. He might be going. That's more like running. I get it. Welcome back to More Than Money. Perfect. Thank you, sir. And your personal financial advisor, Gene Dickinson, 780 years of experience. Just to be very, very clear, for those of you out there that are not really, like, really great with math, it is humanly impossible that I have 780 years of experience. It's humanly impossible. People, dog years, maybe, and people have called me a dog. People have called me a lot. What would it be in cockroach years? Because that's kind of that. And ironically, with 780 years of experience, we started that, John, gosh, I don't remember, 5, 6, 7 years ago, 8 years ago. Maybe longer. It hasn't changed. It was 780 back then and 780 now. I figured once you get beyond like 670, 680, what's the point? Come on. Exactly. Once you get through like 28 billion with McDonald's, let it go. It's just shtick. It's just, it's something, it's fun, it's rememberable. And hopefully you take it tongue-in-cheek as it is offered. Simply a reference that I've been doing this a long time. And I'm very happy to share that experience with you. You know what? There is no, it's not a knock on young financial advisors. I met some wonderful young financial advisors. Well-trained academically. But as much as I admire and respect academic training, there ain't nothing like experience. There just isn't. So when my good friend Jack and I sat for a few minutes, we played a little golf this week. Really enjoyed it. Oh, my gosh. Not only did I enjoy the golf, just because I enjoy golf, but I don't get to play that often. Certainly not as much as many folks do. Gosh, I'm pretty sure I heard one guy afterward. We had a bite to eat, and actually, yeah, we didn't. They were, and I thought I heard one guy say he had played one round in the morning and one round in the afternoon. And I'm going, okay, you got me covered for 3 weeks. That's okay. But we had a chance to talk about a couple things, and a lot of what we talked about is here's the academic answer. Here's the information. But here's the interpretation from how I've seen things unfold over 780 years. And in my humble, okay, that hurt. Ouch. I didn't even get it out. And John's going, no. In my semi-humble opinion, it's of real value. By the way, just as an aside, if you're a young financial advisor and you're saying, well, thanks, buddy. Does that mean if somebody interviews me and they interview you, that they should automatically pick you? In that case, the answer is yes, because not only am I well experienced, but I'm incredibly well trained, and I'm one of the most widely read and stay up to date in my industry of any advisor that I know. Now, having said that, there are a lot of guys my age, a lot of women my age, who have been doing this for a long time. They don't have 40 years experience. They have 1 year experience 40 times. They've learned next to nothing. So it doesn't, the number of years in the business doesn't really matter. But if you're a young financial advisor and you're a little frustrated because people are going, look, son, I got suits older than you. You know, come on. I would recommend that you form a partnership. Find an experienced financial advisor that you really respect, one whose business model, their philosophies, their value systems match yours. Team up so that if somebody walks in and says, look, you seem like a nice young man, you seem very, very bright, but we're looking for experience, say, well, ironically, I've got that too, because my partner has 30 plus years experience. I think that could be very, very useful. I think lots of young financial advisors would benefit from that. By the way, I guarantee you lots of more seasoned financial advisors would benefit from having the youth, the energy, and curiosity that they would gain by teaming up with a younger financial advisor. 610-720-7900 is the number that Doug has called. Doug, good morning.
Good morning, Gene. How are you?
Very well, sir. How may we serve you?
I have a bit of a cold.
We're hanging in. I think it's allergies. I'll get there.
Okay. Gene, as you well know, we have a bull market that's rarely long in the tooth. We have, and especially lately, it's been rather aggressive. We've got a very, how should I say, unusual and somewhat threatening geopolitical situation with North Korea and Iran. And I've been investing as business as usual. I'm sure many people are. And I'm curious, given what might happen, let's hope it does not, but what might happen with, say, North Korea or Iran, certainly the market would not react very favorably at all. What are your thoughts on how you might, quote, hedge the market?
It's a very good question. It's a very appropriate question. But, Doug, I will say in advance of my comments, I think it's always an appropriate question. You're absolutely right. The North Korean issue, the Iranian issue, these are really serious issues that may come back to have a significant impact on the stock market. That could be said at every moment in time that you and I have been on this planet or that you and I have been investing.
It seems worse now than usual.
Well, and that is absolutely the case. And that's, by the way, a tribute to the resiliency of the American spirit. You and I are of an age. You and I have lived through similar experiences. And when young people who are, say, 30 and under say to me, the world is so mad, it's so crazy, it's never been like this, I explain to them, I give them two examples, and almost always the first one is enough, but because I'm long-winded, I always give them two. The first is, really? How about the Civil War? And they go, well, yeah, hundreds of thousands of Americans killed, but very few people were investing, and that doesn't really talk to, like, modern times. And I say, okay, when I was a young lad, 10 years old, we lived through a period where in the course of, say, a five-year time frame, we had JFK murdered in the streets, we had Bobby Kennedy murdered in a hotel, we had Martin Luther King murdered in the streets. We would tune in the TV on a nightly basis, and the first lead story would be today in Vietnam, and it was measured in hundreds of American lives lost.
Right.
So yes, it was. Today is a horrific time of tremendous uncertainty. So was every moment that I have lived through in my lifetime. So The first way you hedge the market, and hedging, for everybody listening, if you're not familiar with the term hedge, most folks have only ever heard it in the form of hedge funds. Hey, hedge funds, isn't that for, like, super rich people, and they do, like, quirky things that may or may not be legal, and Bernie Madoff comes to mind. Well, the original premise of a hedge fund was quite the opposite. The original premise of a hedge fund was, I'm going to give you money, don't lose it.
Right.
If you made me 2%, 3%, 4%, 5%, I'd be all right with that. But negative is unacceptable. Hedge funds now go crazy. Lots of hedge funds go bankrupt. So hedge funds is, if you have that in your mind, you've got to kind of erase that. Start with the fact that hedging means protecting.
Right.
If we're trying to protect against the down market, how might that look? The first line of defense in terms of hedging is an intelligent and appropriate investment strategy for you, which will be different than it will be for me, which will be different for John, will be different for
right.
Gunther. It'll be different for everybody. So if, for example, your anxiety level, because for whatever reason, but in your particular case, perhaps because of your experience, because of your understanding of the market, your anxiety level is relatively low, you may not see a need to change your financial strategy at all. If, on the other hand, you're somebody that as a person, your financial anxiety is extremely high, then your strategy has to be adjusted so that your fundamental exposure to that risk is reduced. You and I might be comfortable having 70 or 80% of our money in the stock market. Somebody who is financially anxious or financially anxiety filled might decide, I simply can't handle that as emotionally. So I'm going to reduce my stock market exposure to levels that you and I would say, that's way too low. 15%, 20%, 25%. So maybe, let's just use the example of it, it's the exact opposite of what you and I might do. So we're 70% in, 30% out. They're the opposite. They only put 30% in the stock market. Will they receive over a long period of time dramatically lower rates of return?
Exactly.
Sure. Will they also receive over a long period of time dramatically less risk? Oh, sure. Will they also suffer far less in the downturns? Will their accounts go down far less if we have another 2008? The answer is yes. So the first line of defense against a dropping market is to not have all your eggs in one basket. Don't have all your eggs exposed to the market. The second line of defense is to have enough cash that you can weather a typical dip and return in the stock market without selling stocks.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, we had a young lady in this week. She has a substantial portfolio. She has a certain need in terms of cash flow on a monthly basis. We have segregated out 3 years of cash so that she can weather a 36-month dip in the market, full return in the market. By the way, dip and return for 2008 was about 24 months.
Mm-hmm.
So we've kind of given her a little extra protection. So having enough cash flow, enough cash or other non-stock assets, mm-hmm, that you can resist the, this is painful, I want to sell out, but I don't want to sell out this low. You don't have to, because your cash flow is protected. Some of the more sophisticated ways that you can hedge the market, you can carve out pieces of your portfolio and put them into guaranteed positions. Quite often, the fixed indexed annuity gives you a guaranteed no-lose position with a reasonable, not a great, but a reasonable upside return, modest guaranteed upside return, and you might make 4 or 5%, perhaps even 6% over the period of the contract, but you can't lose money. So if you're looking at, I'm picking a number, $1 million, and you're saying, you know what, I'm really not 100% anxious, but I wouldn't mind having $250,000 or $500,000 completely safe. That's another way, a bit more sophisticated way to hedge.
Mm-hmm.
Having stop losses placed in your portfolio can be a very effective way to hedge as well. For folks who are invested in individual stocks or exchange-traded funds, stop mm-hmm losses do not apply to mutual funds, but if right you have an exchange-traded fund or an individual stock, let's say you have Apple stock, let's say you paid $150, and you tell your advisor that if it goes below $120, you want it sold, they can enter that into the computer, and when it hits $120, it'll be sold. Stop losses are not foolproof. A lot of people believe that they are. They are not. There are lots of ways that, sadly, they can produce results that are not exactly what you expected, but they can provide some serious downside protection. Lots of folks over the years have done what are referred to as trailing stop losses. The stop losses automatically rise as the share values rise. So if I paid $10 a share and I wanted to be out at 8, as it goes to 12, now I'm out at, say, 9.50. As it goes to 14, now I'm out at 11. So as the dollar value rises, so does the stop loss. That can be an effective hedging position.
Your stop loss scenario, could that also apply to ETFs?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. I wasn't aware of the sliding scale on a stop loss.
And that is something that can be adjusted kind of to fit your personality, your kind of view of the market. Mm-hmm. Get a little tighter if you think the market is really oversold, or a little looser if you think that there's a little more room for it to run. Mm-hmm. Volatility in the market wreaks havoc with stop loss orders. You get stopped out on a day where the market dropped for no apparent reason.
And then it bounces back.
And sometimes all in the same day, which is really frustrating. The other thing that I would caution both you as a hedging technique and everyone out there, don't be misled by quote unquote the sophistication of the technique. Your hedging tactic might be as simple as, you know what, if the stock market goes down 10%, I'm going to pull 10% out of the stock market and put it off to the side. So if I'm 70%, I become 60. If it goes down a little bit more, I become 50. If it goes down a little bit more. If you had done that in 2008, starting with the dip in the market at the end of 07, and started taking some dollars out, you would have been largely out of the stock market by mid-2008, roughly 8 months into the decline, and you would have missed the vast majority of that. Now, it doesn't work every time, but it allows you to have some sense that you're not helpless. You don't have to sit and just watch this like a cork in the ocean.
Right. Now, when you take it out of the stock market and you say put it aside, are you putting it aside in bonds, or are you putting it aside in cash?
And that will depend on your personal financial strategy. And for some folks, putting it aside says, if I'm pulling it out, I'm going to keep it out for 3 or 4 or 5 years, which means I'm going to put it in short-term bonds.
Uh-huh.
For some folks, I'm going to take it out until I can sleep at night, which might be 2 weeks.
Right.
So that in that case, you put it in a money market or some sort of very short term, right, very high quality holding.
Which these days pay almost nothing.
They pay very little. They're a little better now than they were a year or two ago. They pay almost nothing. You're absolutely right. But I remind everybody that makes that observation. My mom's money was safe and secure in an account that paid zero interest for as long as I could remember in my growing up years. Mm-hmm. It was called a cookie jar.
Cookie jar.
And she had it there not because it paid interest, but because it was safe.
Right.
It was secure.
Right. And she knew exactly where it was.
No questions asked. So if your objective is to get out of the market and get to a safe haven, while you might have an eye towards, can I make a couple dollars while I'm there, that's not your priority. Your priority is safe, out of the wind, get it into the cove and get it tied up.
Mm-hmm.
I hope I helped a little.
I think so, yes. You made me aware of, well, for example, the sliding short stop scenario. That's an interesting one.
Something to think about, sir.
Yes.
I appreciate the call very much.
Okay, Gene. Take care.
Thanks,
Get
Doug.
Rid of that cold.
I'll work on that.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
610-720-7900. Gene at AskMTM.com, MoreThanMoneyOnline.com. I promised before our last break that I would talk about long-term care policies that don't have annual premiums. Whoa. Very similar. By the way, I'm certain that they got this idea from homeowners insurance. You pay a annual premium for your homeowners insurance, and every year it goes up a little bit, Sometimes it goes up a lot. If you're in Houston or Florida, I'm thinking you're going to see some rate increases. Whew. I don't know how that works in Puerto Rico. Don't know. But years ago, there was a company in the homeowners insurance business that said, you know, I know that you don't like paying homeowners insurance premiums, so what we're going to do is we're going to let you make a deposit. You make a deposit to a bank. And now you don't pay annual premiums. We're going to, you're going to let us use the earnings off of that deposit. And we'll cover your premiums as long as you're a member. Well, that was many years ago. And for a lot of folks, it made a great deal of sense. For a lot of folks, there was a local insurance company here in the Lehigh Valley that did that. They were very well respected, very well regarded for years and years. The long-term care insurance industry had some real struggles coming out of 1990s, particularly, where the traditional policies of you take out, you pick your coverage, you pick your waiting period, you pick your benefit amount, you pick your benefit period, and here's your annual premium. And people go, well, yeah, I can afford that. That's great. And 3 or 4 years later, they got a notice in the mail that their premium went up 62%. And all of a sudden, something that was affordable is no longer affordable. Pretty disappointing. In some cases, they had to drop the coverage completely as they were getting close to a point where they would probably need it. So a hybrid plan says something very different. It says you make a deposit. I just use very simple numbers. Let's say you're 65 years old. You make a deposit of, say, $100,000. If you need thereafter long-term care for whatever reason, wherever you may need it, that $100,000 becomes $350,000. And it's paid tax-free for long-term care benefits. Wow, that's pretty amazing. No annual premiums. So if you go 8, 9, 10 years, you haven't needed anything, but you haven't paid in anything, this is great. And then all of a sudden you do need it. There's not $100,000 there, there's $350,000, literally from day one. What if you never need it? Well, that's kind of disappointing. You gave up $100,000. No. Along with this hybrid plan, there's a death benefit. And if you give them $100,000, death benefit will probably be, I'm picking a number, I'm going to be in the ballpark, about $140,000, $150,000 bucks. So if you never need it, never take it back, you have your heirs will receive $140,000, $150,000. By the way, that's tax free too because it's income tax. Wow, so far really good. But $100,000, Gene. What if I need that later? You can have it back. Let's say you're out there 8, 9, 10, 12 years. Let's paint a different scenario. Let's say you got it at 65. You're now 87, and you're saying, "I thought I had a good financial plan, but I've run through all my money, and I'm looking for ways that I can get more income. I need more assets. I'm afraid of long-term care costs, but right now I would like to be able to pay my PPL bill." You can take the money back. No penalties. Pretty interesting combination. All that time, of course, how is that possible? How is it not too good to be true? They have your $100,000. They put it to good work, put it to good use. They invest it. They get good returns. They have been earning that investment return all those years. They give you back your original investment. You've had coverage all those years. So you can leverage up $100,000 to $350,000 for long-term care purposes. You can leverage up $100,000 to $140,000, $150,000 for life insurance purposes. And you can change your mind and get your money back. Pretty interesting set of scenarios. Maybe that helps. 610-720-7900. Gene at AskMTM.com. MoreThanMoneyOnline.com. The client says, we got to go. Should we stay? Should we go? No, we got to go. It's a hard break. Oh, my gosh. 610-720-7900. We'll take your calls after this on More Than Money. It's always tease, tease, tease. You're happy when I'm on my knees. One day is fine and next is black. So if you... Hey, we're back. No, I'm not the Clash. Uh-huh. I know, everybody's disappointed now. Watch yourself. I understand that, just watch yourself. Welcome back to More Than Money. You've got Gene Dickinson, your host, your personal financial advisor, live this Saturday morning, or as live as I can be, I sound so nasal. I tried to convince my wife that it sounded, you know, like sexy, and she went, no. Really, no, it really doesn't. Okay. Gave it a go. If you would like to join us, 610-720-7900, or you can send me an email, gene@askmtm.com, or you can check us out on the web, morethanmoneyonline.com. Just trying to get a few more of my rescue products down in, on the break there. And yeah, it's been a couple of weeks being a little nasal, a little drippy. The cough seems to have subsided. That's great. That's a good thing. So I think we're going in the right direction. I appreciate everybody's kind thoughts. People being very patient. That's very kind of you. If you missed any part of the first 90 minutes of our show, do not despair. You will have complete access to the entire show Monday, noonish, as John does his thing and sends the shows over, and Joe does her thing and posts those to our website. Through the miracles of modern technology, you have access to all the TV, all the radio shows that we've done for, now we're up 7-8 years. So fantastic. Lots of great information there. And let you kind of listen in. We had a lot of good conversation about long-term care insurance. A lot of good questions, a lot of good issues there. I hope that you will check that out. Also, we had a really good conversation with Doug about hedging. Should I stay or should I go was kind of my theme. Should I be in the market? Should I stay in the stock market or should I go? And Doug said, if you're going to stay, are there techniques, are there strategies, tactics that you can use to protect yourself? And the answer is yeah. And there's lots of them, most of which I wouldn't recommend. Some of which I would recommend heartily. And then there's a bunch all in between. But that doesn't matter. Because in general, I hate in general. I only care about what's right for you. And as a result, lots of our questions, our answers start with, it depends. It depends. Because it depends on you. 610-720-7900, Gene at AskMTM.com, one of our most loyal listeners and just one of my favorite guys on the planet. Just love this guy. Writes about bankonyourself.com, which apparently they ran a spot. And says, I swear the volume is higher on their commercials. And that may be. First of all, that makes me uncomfortable. We have had conversations about bankonyourself.com, Bank on Yourself, the organization. We've had conversations about them in the past. Just a moment, sir. Much better. Thank you. And I'm not a fan in any way, shape, or form. Their ads are, in my opinion, insanely misleading. Drop your 401k, drop your IRA, better than any 401k. That's just a big steaming pile of hoo-ha. In the past, I've read over the air, I'm sure it may still very well be in my radio bag, the disclaimer that's on their website. And it goes, the first thing on the website says, better than anything else in the world. You got to give us all your money because you're crazy if you don't. The disclaimer says the exact opposite. You could lose everything. Life is terrible. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. And it was printed in like font type, like everything I print now is in 18 because I don't have to put on any glasses. Theirs was in 0.18, which I'm not even sure they make a font size that small. It's all based on life insurance. Life insurance is a wonderful product when used properly. It's kind of like a chainsaw. It's a wonderful tool when used properly. It's incredibly dangerous when it isn't. And one piece of their ad talks about you never lose money and, you know, the Wall Street casino, yada, yada. Most not. And you know what? I don't know that. I'll back off on that. A significant number, if not most, of the insurance companies that Bank on Yourself represents are registered stock. They're traded on the New York Stock Exchange. So you're accepting assurances and guarantees from companies that are in the Wall Street casino. Duh. The other thing that, and perhaps their programs have changed. I only look at it every year or two because it makes me a little nauseous. But the last time I looked at it, I went through one of their books in detail. And part of their ads is you can never lose a penny, never lose a penny, never lose a penny. And they gave a line-by-line spreadsheet illustration of one of their investments. And I'm picking a number as I'm not going by memory. I'm just giving a demo. You write a check for $5,000, and in the first year, it's worth $3,100. What happened to the part of I can't lose a penny? Because if I leave at the end of a year, I lost $1,900. And it stays that way for 5 or 6 years, where you have less money than you put in. Isn't, if you have less money than you put in, didn't you lose? Did I'm thinking you lost something. But their illustration was for 20 years. We did some simple math. And if over 20 years, you stayed the entire 20 years, your internal rate of return, your compound rate of return was right at 3%. That's not a dreadful thing, but it's got nothing to do with what their ads talk about. And it's certainly got nothing to do with beats the heck out of any 401k. We have lots of folks who come to us with 401ks. They look at it, they show it to us, and I go, that's a lot of money. And they go, I know. How is that humanly possible? They just signed up, they had faith, and off they went, and now they're looking at, they got 7, 8, 9% compound returns over 30, 40, 50 years. Not 50, I don't think. 30 or 40 years. A long time. And they got tax deductions along the way. Huh, better than any. I'm sorry, do you think that got me a little torqued?
No.
No, okay. Moving right along.
Okay.
Yes. 610-720-7900, gene@askmtm.com, morethanmoneyonline.com. John, if you'll just make a note and pass that along to Craig, that because that's, they should not be on the show. Thanks. We've had a lot of conversations in the last 6 months, more than we have ever had before, about folks who are still working at age 70, and yet they're faced with this required minimum distribution. Okay, so if you're not yet 70, you probably haven't paid attention. So here's the deal. If you put money in an IRA over many, many, many years, you get a tax deduction probably, and it's been growing without any income taxes being paid. And the IRS says that's perfectly fine. That's exactly what it's supposed to do. But there's a limit to our patience. We want to get some tax out of this. So starting at roughly 70, that's not really the rule, but it's good enough for us. For the moment, for our discussion. At roughly 70, the IRS says you have to begin taking out some small piece of your IRA. And it was based on, the rule was set up decades ago, and it was based on the assumption that, gosh, by 70, you've already been retired 6 or 7 years, you're going to need the money anyway. It was an interesting premise back then, not necessarily the case now. Obviously not necessarily the case, because in the last 6 months, we've been getting lots of questions about, hey, I'm still working. I don't want to take this RMD. Well, there are ways that you don't have to if you're still working. And Ed Slott is, in terms of the industry's recognition, maybe the smartest guy about IRAs that there's ever been. He's amazing. And he's not far from here, just outside New York City. Just amazing guy. And he issued a guidance to financial advisors just a week or so ago. And it talks about where you might get an exception to the requirement that you take money out of your IRA at 70. And indeed, he talks about if you are currently working, if you are currently participating in the company's 401k plan, oh, by the way, and if you're not an owner of the company, that's kind of disappointing for yours truly. But if you're not an owner of the company, and their definition, by the way, of not an owner of the company, is if you own more than 5%. So if you worked for J&J and you bought stock in J&J, you might have 10,000 shares of J&J. Yeah, you are a 0.000. You're not more than 5%, so you're good. By the way, and more than 5% also includes any shares that are held by other family members. So if Gene thought he was going to get creative and let Diane have the company, and then he could do this, yeah, they say, caught you. I'm glad I read that. So saves me from getting caught. So if you are not the owner and you're working past age 70 and you're participating in their 401k plan, you don't have to take an RMD. Now, it's kind of interesting, and Ed Slott points this out. I have never seen this pointed out anywhere else. It does not say you have to be working full time. So he's saying, if you're on the payroll, even if theoretically you only worked an hour a day, an hour a week, 1 week a year, according to the IRS rule, it does not say working full time. It says working. So if you're on the payroll, you're over age 70, you can delay taking your RMD. Now, the delay is just on the 401k RMD. So, again, where does that leave us? Let's say that you were in a 401k plan for many, many years, and you have $800,000 in it, and you decided to leave that company, and you took that money and put it into an IRA. And now, a couple years later, at age 70-ish, you decide you're going to go back to work. You have a 401k plan. It has $101 in it because you just got started. It's got like no money. The RMD only applies to the 401k, so you don't have to take money out of your $101. But you do have to take it out of the IRA. Let's say it's $800,000. It would be something around $30,000. Wow, this doesn't work very well. It's just not a big deal. Well, that could change because you can choose, in almost every case, to roll the $800,000 IRA into your company 401k. And now, as long as you're working, not necessarily full time, as long as you're not an owner, exactly more than 5%. Exactly right, John. Thank you. You can defer your RMD. Eventually, of course, you're going to stop working. Maybe. No, you're going to stop working, definitely. Could be one way as you rise to the top. Or could be voluntary. At the point that you do take retirement, you must take your RMD for the year that you retire. By the way, even if you retire on December 31st, now how goofy is that? So let's say you're now 75 and you say, I'm going to retire, but I'm going to do it at the end of the year so I don't have to take my RMD. The IRS says, sorry, got to take it. Now, you don't have to take it on December 31st, yet you're allowed to take it by April 1st of the following year, but you have to take it. Very good. Very, very good. That's very helpful. I think so. 610-720-7900, Gene at AskMTM.com, MoreThanMoneyOnline.com. How much time do we have, sir?
We have like 3.5.
Before we go to our thank you. Got it. Very good. Then I want to talk about a topic that has come up a couple times in the last couple weeks. And I try to keep a kind of finger on the pulse of what folks are interested in by what folks that I that are part of our More Than Money family talk to me about, either as clients or as prospective clients or just folks that I meet and I get introduced to, and they go, oh, you're More Than Money, that's cool. And they talk to me about it. And it's the topic is retirement. And then people go, I don't want to wait to retire. What's your idea of not waiting? I want to be retired at age 45. actually, the word retirement at that point kind of doesn't seem to fit, because retirement for most people has the connotation of Social Security and Medicare and RMDs and a place in Florida. Let's just go down. We'll be snowbirds. It'll be great. Right? You and me. And she's going, well, maybe you should go. The differential between retirement and what some people want to do is maybe just the phrase. I have used the phrase for many years, financial independence. If you don't want to wait to quote unquote retire, you may not, maybe the term that you need to use is, I want to be financially independent. At some point in my life, if you're 25 years old now, 22 years old, I've got two daughters, one turning 20, one turned 20 this week, one will turn 22 shortly, 10 days. And if you're that age and you want to be financially independent, I would guess 40 or 45 is about the right number. About the right age. If you are deeply committed and you want to be able to be at that point in your life in a position to say, I don't have to work. I simply don't have to. That's absolutely possible. That's very different than retirement. Which, oh, by the way, just because I had one conversation with a young man who said, I get the retirement part. I get the financial independent part. What I really want to be is wealthy. I just want to have a big stinking pile of money. And that's a very, very different thing. And the difference, the fundamental difference, is how you think about it. It's how you think about it. It's how you think about not it, but about things or about yourself. There are folks, if you said to them, you know, you could be financially independent at age 45, they would go, oh, not me. Okay, then you're right. And other folks, you would say, you could be financially independent at 45. They would go, really? That would be cool. How do I do that? And let's get going. And they will likely get it. It's, as is the case with so many financial topics, it's kind of a lot about what you think about and how you think. Ah, Voice of an Angel says we got to go. And heading off to Lebanon Valley. Homecoming. Our daughter is a senior out there and just has loved her time at Lebanon Valley College out in Annville. So we'll try to make it through the detoured traffic and get out there and spend some time with her. If you need us for any purpose, if you need a second opinion on your personal financial situation, just let us know. You can do it easily. Gene at askmtm.com, G-E-N-E. And askmtm.com works really, really well. You can go on our website, morethanmoneyonline.com. There's lots of ways to contact with us there. And you can go old school on us. That's perfectly acceptable. You can give us a call, 610-746-7007. 610-746-7007. Folks, thanks very much for being part of this edition of More Than Money. Enjoy the Clash. We'll see you next time on More Than Money.
Darling, you got to let me know. Should I stay or should I go? If you say that you are mine, I'll be here till the end of time. So you got to let me know, should I stay or should I go? It's always tease, tease, tease. You're happy when I'm on my knees. One day it's fine and next it's black. So if you want me off your back, well come on and let me know, should I stay or should I go? Should I stay or should I go now? Should I stay or should I go now? If I go there will be trouble, and if I stay it will be double. decision's bugging me. Decision may molest you. If you don't want me, set me free. So exactly who I'm supposed to be. Don't you know which clothes even fit me? Come on and let me know. Should I cool it or should I blow? Should I stay or should I go now? If I go, there will be trouble. And if I stay, it will be double. So you gotta let me know. Should I cool it or should I blow?